Mentalne granice se nam je našla da čak će ovo kombinata s mojši koji je nam reči krišne četanje kako mi se nama svi već grada šita i gospodina. Rekšna, rekšna, krišna, krišna, rekari, prihama, prihama, nam, rekari. Šalan. We are moving slowly through the list of words which the Vajika Brahma accepted. And in the previous verse, sort of, remember, the previous verse was saying, because it has become powerful for execution of austerities, their consciousness is unshakable because they do not try to enjoy anything within the material world. Such naturally liberated sages accept foodstuff that are offered to them by destiny, and if by chance they happen to eat contaminated food, they are not affected, just like fire, which burns up contaminated substances that are offered to them. So this verse again speaks about the spiritual master as fire, or like of fire, and that the ability to burn things as mentioned here, as pointed out. So the fire can devour anything which is impure. So that is what a saintly person is supposed to do as well. We know from Srila Prabhupada often uses the example of how the sun can evaporate water even from a salty place. We can even evaporate water from urine and things like that. So that's the point which is meant here. So it's interesting because sometimes we go through the Srimad Bhagavatam verses and we might lose lose the red thread to it. So does anybody remember how we came to that conversation between the Avadhuta Brahma and who else is involved and who's narrating it? Anybody remember? Yeah. So why is Krishna narrating that story? He's talking to Uddhava.
He wants Uddhava to stay on the ground.
Preaching Uddhava.
Hmm?
I think he's preaching Uddhava.
He's preaching to Uddhava. Yeah. So basically, Krishna tells Uddhava to take sannyas. He tells him to take sannyas, and he tells Uddhava to and then Uddhava says to him, "Well, you're my spiritual master." So it's another way to kind of hang on to Krishna. And Krishna says, "Well, you actually are your own spiritual master."
Mm-hmm.
It sounds a bit new agey in the first sense, but we're gonna read into it what it actually meant. So then he starts giving this example from Maharaj Yadu, how he on his journey meets the Avadhuta Brahma, and the Avadhuta Brahma saying that he tells him about all the spiritual masters he has. But basically he himself is the spiritual master because he has the ability to see all these creations as the spiritual masters. So we might have, like we see fire every day pretty much now, like we cook or we light an incense or whatever, like we see the ghee lamp on the altar, we see fire all the time. But it's the intelligence to use it as a spiritual master which makes one his own spiritual master. So there's a high level of discrimination there. So if someone quickly read the introduction of that seventh chapter to make that point clear. This is the summary. Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava, that's the name of the chapter. As described in the chapter, the Supreme Lord Krishna replied to Uddhava's prayerful entreaty that he allows to return with him to his abode, that he be allowed to return with him to his abode. Krishna advised Uddhava to take the renounced order of sannyas, and when Uddhava showed interest in more elaborate instructions, the Lord further described the Avadhuta's account of his 28 spiritual masters. After hearing Uddhava's prayerful request to be taken back with him to the spiritual world, Lord Krishna informed him that he was indeed desirous of returning to his own personal abode, because the purpose of his descent had been successfully fulfilled, and the misfortunes of Kali Yuga would soon beset the earth. He thus advised Uddhava to take up sannyas by fixing his mind upon him and establishing himself in theoretical and realized transcendental knowledge. His Lord further instructed Uddhava that while remaining untouched by contamination and compassionately disposed to all beings, he should begin wandering throughout this temporary world, which is simply the combined manifestation of the Lord's illusory energy and imagination of the living entities. Buddha then stated that renouncing material things in a spirit of detachment is the source of the highest auspiciousness, but such renunciation is certainly extremely difficult to accomplish for living entities other than the devotees of the Supreme Lord, because they are very attached to sense gratification. Uddhava expressed the need for sound instructions by which foolish persons who misidentify the body as a self can be convinced to carry out their duties in accordance with the order of the Supreme Lord. Even great demigods like Brahma are not completely surrendered to the Lord. But Uddhava declared that he himself had taken shelter of the only true instructor of the Absolute Truth, Lord Narayan, the all-perfect, all-knowing master of Vaikuntha, and the only real friend of all living entities. So this is connecting to the instructions, like, you know, to the kind of the beginning of this narration of Archidamis, the other of the Brahma. Hearing this, the Supreme Lord replied that actually the jiva soul is its own guru. Within this human body, the living beings can search out the Supreme Lord by positive and negative means, and ultimately achieve him. For this reason, the human form of life is most dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this regard, Lord Krishna began to describe an ancient conversation between a Brahma Avadhuta and the great King Yadu. So, Maharaj Yadu's inquiry is also very interesting when he meets the Brahma, because he can see all these wonderful features of the saintly person, and he wonders why he's doing what he's doing. So, Maharaj Yadu once observed, this text number 25, Maharaj Yadu once observed a certain Brahma Avadhuta who appeared to be quite young and learned, wondering about fearlessly. Being himself most learned in spiritual science, the king took the opportunity to inquire from him as follows. Sri Yadu said, "O Brahma, I see that you are not engaged in any practical religious activity, and yet you have acquired a most expert understanding of all things and all people within this world. Kindly tell me, sir, how did you acquire this extraordinary intelligence, and why are you traveling freely throughout the world, behaving as if you were a child?" Generally, human beings work hard to cultivate religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, also knowledge of the soul, and the usual motive is to increase the duration of life, to acquire fame and enjoyment for your opulence. You, however, although capable, learned, expert, handsome, and most eloquent, are not engaged in doing anything, nor do you desire anything. Rather, you appear stupefied and maddened as if you were a ghostly creature. So that's basically what Maharaj Yadu is seeing. He's wondering why is such an elevated person behaving like that. And then the Avadhuta Brahma basically tells him how people who are attached to material enjoyment and who like focus everything on it, they're actually the real stupid people, and that he could see through it, and therefore he just renounced everything in connection with that. And then he starts talking about the gurus he's been taking along the way. And it's interesting because the introduction speaks of 28, but he says 24 gurus. So the earth, air, sky, water, and fire. So we're up to fire now. And then moon, sun, pigeon, python, sea, moth, honeybee, elephant and honey thief, the deer, the fish, the prostitute, pingala, the purara bird and the child, the young girl Aaron at a certain spot on Wharf. So it's the intelligence of the Avadhuka Brahmana which enables him to use all what we could see every day in our life as his own spiritual masters. So we hear about three kinds of intelligence. That is the intelligence through hearing, intelligence through experiencing, and the in the third class intelligence is not that clever to do the same, see the thing again. And it came to my mind, just going to quickly share that, as many years ago I watched it in which the one part of the an episode of The Simpsons. And Lisa Simpson is doing an experiment to prove or to test if her hamster or her brother is more intelligent. So she takes a cupcake and she wires it all up. And so the hamster comes and he touches the cupcake and he gets an electric shock. And he kind of wonders, contemplates, looks around, and finds the plug and pulls it out and starts eating the cupcake. So, and then Bart Simpson comes along, so she wires it all up, gets another muffin, puts it all together, and Bart Simpson comes and he touches his pancake. Ow! 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 And it kind of keeps going, so like Lisa Simpson and like just makes a hook on the hamster and a little lisp where she can wires down who's more intelligent. That's often how we do it. And then we get really badly burned by our attempts to desire to enjoy the material energy. But then we think, now I've figured it all out, now I know how to do it. And it's going to try it again. And when we get burned again, then we think, oh well, I just didn't consider this one point that I'm sure I can enjoy if I just, have this one thing sorted before I try it again. So again we try it. Again, like a typical example is with partners. And you can say, too, this is a word of passion, people start a relationship and it starts off so nicely and then very quickly just becomes stale and just becomes like a horror trip. Because, there's anger and, they cheat each other and all those kind of things. And then in frustration, first with attachment, you often people talking about the first couple of weeks, it's like this isn't like this person's the ultimate. He's just or she's just perfect. And then 3 weeks later, the same person talks about the same person as if he would be the last demon and totally rejects it. And then hooks on to another person. And the same story repeats itself. So there's no learning process. Often people when you're in book distribution, they often talk about how you learn through experience. But we can practically see that most people don't learn through experience. It just never hits home, kind of. Because they just try the same thing again and again and again. So the first class intelligence is demonstrated by the Avadhuta Brahmana, who looks around himself in the world and he sees all these examples, positive and negative. He sees, for example, the fire as a positive example, and then he sees some of the animal examples are the negative example, the bee gets trapped in the, I think that was mentioned here as well, the bee gets trapped, and the elephant as well, running after the opposite sex, so it's many negative examples as well. So he takes this lesson from both. To make further progress and to understand the reality of the world. And he doesn't want to delude himself by thinking, oh, it's all not so bad. He actually sees things as they are and is acting upon it intelligently. So now I've been talking about that one can be one's own guru. And we actually hear that a lot. If you go out in book distribution, basically everybody thinks they're their own guru. And you can see they're on a very different level than the Avadhuta Brahmana. So you talk to people and they don't want to read any books because they're saying, oh, it comes all from within. Mm-hmm. And you just have to feel, the movements of the soul. And basically you can figure it all out and think themselves very advanced spiritually because they just speculate about it, and a total deluded mind with total confused emotions, and but still there's this pride. So this is not meant here by being one's own guru. And Srila Prabhupada is giving a quote, and he says, Srila Jiva Goswami states in this connection, Guru Anusaraya, Pravapati Iti Arto, the knowledge acquired by one's own perception and intelligence leads one to appreciate the value of the representative of Lord Krishna. The word Shreya from the verse indicates that one can advance in life through one's own intelligence. By good association, one should come to understand one's eternal position as servant of Krishna, and then one becomes eager to live in the company of enlightened persons. Both of the same feather flock together. The symptoms of an enlightened person of Krishna is that he is eager for the company of other such great souls. Thus, by one's sensitive and rational observation of this material world, one should come to appreciate the value of spiritual life and the association of the devotees. So it's explained as like in a sense, a beginning stage, which gives one the desire to seek out the same association, to look, you know, for the pure devotee, and to apply oneself in devotional service. It is not meant that I'm our only guru and you can't teach me because, you know, I'm the one who has it all figured out. That's a demoniac quality. So less intelligent people would say that. But Krishna says an intelligent person, expert in perceiving, that's in the previous verses, Krishna says, an intelligent person, expert in perceiving the world around him and in applying sound logic, can achieve real benefit through his own intelligence. That sometimes one acts as one's instructor, spiritual master. So it doesn't contradict at all that one should, that one must take initiation from a bona fide guru, because this accepting oneself as one's own spiritual master actually should lead one to the point that one accepts an outside guru of oneself. Srila Prabhupada is saying this point over and over again. So if you look at this attitude of basically there's two kind of people. One person who has pride and who thinks that he can himself figure everything out about spirituality and doesn't need anybody external. And if you look in the Bhagavad Gita, we can very quickly see that these tendencies are described in the 7th chapter, in the 15th and the 14th verse, and 16th verse. Namandashkritinomuta prapatyanti naradana mayaya parita jnana apsaram vavamashita. Those miscreants who grow to be foolish are those among mankind whose knowledge is stolen by the illusion of partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. So that would be a rebellious attitude to think that we know things and that we can be our own guru. But the pious kind of person, actually, they inquire, they see their distress, and they see that they don't really, that they actually can't enjoy this material world, and out of the attitude they look for help in the Supreme Lord. So the difference between impious and pious is that the pious approaches higher authority. There's this submissive attitude in there. This chatvida bhantanam jana sukrit nojana arta vinyasya arta ki jnani cha bharatashava. O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive and huge searching for knowledge of the Absolute. So these people approach Krishna ultimately. They're looking for help in the Lord. And we find also in the Bhagavad Gita and in other words this attitude of submission and of the desire to do devotional service. And it's again in connection with approaching the bona fide spiritual master. Does anybody know which verse I'm referring to? Everybody awake? Yeah, Sarvedi Pranipatina, Sarvedi Krishna Seva, Yavapak, Shantide, Yanam, Yanam, Sapadashana. So therefore it's ultimately just to believe us. And if we don't think we need somebody outside of us, then we're really in trouble. Because then we always remain on the mental platform, and the mental platform doesn't bring us anywhere. Because we can't look outside ourselves. This first master is so amazing because he is on the boat and we are drowning in the ocean. So we can't pick ourselves up out of the ocean. We need somebody who reaches down the hand and pulls us out on the boat. And if we don't have that, there's no chance. Like, I don't know if anybody, like, you know, like, if you look in the ocean is like, it's ferocious. There's nothing there we can hold on to. Nothing. There might be a plank, but if you're in the middle of the ocean, what are you going to do? And you can struggle for a little while, but ultimately, you're going to be lost. There's no way that you can get out of the ocean. So that's another there's another aspect in this verse, and that refers to the mercy of the spiritual master. So he is described that for the welfare of the conditioned souls to desire your happiness, a saint person may accept the worshipable position of a spiritual master. And that's like fire burns to ashes all the past and future sinful actions of the worshippers by mercifully accepting their offerings. It's like Krishna as well, like Krishna is mercifully accepting our offerings. He doesn't need anything, he's possessing everything. He doesn't need our dry puris or our burnt halva or whatever we like. Like, you know, some of us are expert, like, you know. But like, you know, he doesn't really need anything what we offer, as beautiful as it may be. So this very master, because he is self-sufficient and he's self-satisfied, he doesn't need to come to us and instruct us. He doesn't get a kick out of us following his instructions, in a sense. He comes purely for helping us. That's why he's so merciful, because there's no self-interest at all. It's very difficult to imagine that, because we have always interest in doing things. Like, all our activities are driven by desire. We want this, we want that, we go over here, we go there. So all our, we're always driven by some kind of desire. Maybe it's gross, or sometimes it is subtle. But this is our driving force. But the spiritual master doesn't have any external desires, but out of his compassion, born out of his transcendental nature, he comes to us, and he burns up our sinful reactions, gives us guidance, and goes so much trouble, you know. He listens to all the crap we have to say, and all, you know, our little tricks where we deviate, and sometimes we don't follow and we don't do it or whatever. So he's putting up with all these kind of things just because of his compassion. He's dedicating his whole life, he's wrecking himself and traveling all over the world. And it's just unbelievable how merciful this spiritual master is, even though he doesn't have any, like, apparent, like, he doesn't get anything out of it. He doesn't get anything. He's just doing that purely to please the Supreme Lord, and out of this cause of compassion towards us. So, I was thinking about this, because, you know, often we say such exalted prayers, like doing the morning program, you know, like Gora Arati. There's so many exalted prayers by such incredible exalted personalities. And sometimes we might even forget what they mean. Like, you know, so many times our minds can just go on autopilot and totally forget what we're actually saying. And we're thinking about, oh, I gotta do this, I gotta do that. And like, why did she say this? And why did he do that? Is that something to... And interestingly enough, I don't have this first verse translated. And then it's just, yeah, didn't you have to narrate the, from the Guru Rashtika? You have to write down the translation of the first verse, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you say it? I didn't write it.
No.
Oh, I'll listen.
Okay. This translation of humanity, this is the guide to a border on the first side to extinguish it, similarly to the Tumasa, bringing the two that could dwell by extinguishing the environment to exist with such an aspect of identity. And such a spiritual master will be the ocean of auspicious cause.
Well done, well done. So that's basically you know, saying the same thing as the first. But here you subscribe to like, you know, water, and you subscribe to fire, different connections. So the second one, chanting the holy name, dancing in ecstasy, singing and playing musical instruments, the spiritual master is always gladdened by the sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because he's relishing the mellows of pure devotion within his mind, some of his hair stands on end, he feels quivering in his body and tears flow from his eyes like waves. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. The spiritual master is always engaged in the temple worship of Sri, Sri Radha and Krishna. He also engages his disciples in such worship. They dress the ladies in beautiful clothes and ornaments, clean the temple and perform other similar worship of the Lord. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. The spiritual master is always offering Krishna four kinds of delicious food, analyzes that which is lectured, drunk and sucked. When the spiritual master sees that the devotees are satisfied by eating Bhagavad Prasad, he is satisfied. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. The spiritual master is always eager to hear and chant about the unlimited conjugal pastimes of Radhika and Madhava and their qualities, names and forms. The spiritual master aspires to relish these at every moment. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. The spiritual master is very dear because he is expert in assisting the gopis, who at different times make different tasteful arrangements for the perfection of Radha and Krishna's conjugal affairs within the groves of Vrindavan. I offer my most humble obeisances under the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. The spiritual master is to be honored as much as the Supreme Lord, because he is the most confidential servant of the Lord. This is acknowledged in all revealed scriptures and followed by all authorities. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of such a spiritual master who is a bona fide representative of Sri Hari Krishna. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one receives the benediction of Krishna. Without the grace of the spiritual master, one cannot make any advancement. Therefore, I should always remember and praise the spiritual master at least three times a day. I should offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual master. It's a very impressive prayer, like when it speaks about the spiritual master being assistant of the gopis, you know, of being always in ecstasy serving the Lord. What does such a person have to gain? So again, you can see it's the pure mercy. So basically the two different points which I mentioned, that is how the spiritual master, on which platform the spiritual master is. There's many verses describing the transcendental platform the spiritual master is acting upon, and also what is giving out to others. This is basically what is mentioned throughout this verse. So, again, to refer to this, to the verse in the Bhagavad Gita 3:34, we made our relationship potent with the spiritual master with these three items of submission, inquiry, and service. So we have such a close associate of the Supreme Lord, one whose character partakes in the Lord's pastimes, and to Srila Prabhupada was saying to make this relationship potent, we have to, through the activities from the spiritual master, we have to add these three items, and then also we become empowered. There's a purport from Srila Prabhupada responding, Arjuna was advised to receive transcendental knowledge from the realized person with surrender, questions and service. Receiving transcendental knowledge is not like exchanging dollars. Such knowledge is to be received by service to the spiritual master. As Brahmaji receives the knowledge directly from the Lord by satisfying him fully, similarly one has to receive the transcendental knowledge from the spiritual master by satisfying him. The spiritual master's satisfaction is a means of assimilating transcendental knowledge. One cannot understand transcendental knowledge simply by becoming a grammarian. And there's another from the Shirusha Uttamanishad. Yasyadi Vipara Bhaktiya Yata Divi Kata Guru Sasyati Katita Yakshu Pakashanti Mahatmano. Only as the one who has unflinching devotion to the Lord and to the spiritual master, the strength and the knowledge become automatically revealed. So it's interesting because now the International Society of Krishna Consciousness has grown further, and now there's this, after Shri Prabhupada passed away, many of his disciples took the post of being instructing spiritual masters. And beside us, he preferred everybody being initiated by one of his followers. And we can see what made them able to take themselves disciples. And that is exactly these things. They were submissive to Shri Prabhupada. They hadn't had a challenging attitude. And they've been rendering very humble service to him. And you know, you can see often letters and so on that there was this inquiry. So for just being a humble servant of the spiritual master, we ourselves become empowered, and we are able to attain Divya Gyan, or realized knowledge. All we have to do basically is to be a humble servant of the spiritual master, and to serve him, you know, to the best of our capacity, and trying to face again and again the monsters we're hiding in our hearts to become more qualified. Because basically, I suppose we have to show our gratitude, because you know, we see that how merciful the spiritual master is. So usually, if a person is very merciful, it gives you a feeling of indebtedness, isn't it? And where would everybody of us be if he wouldn't have come in touch with Shri Prabhupada, his books, with him himself, and his representatives? Where would everybody be? And then we would just kind of do the same old dirty thing we've been doing before. So without having that association, without having, you know, receiving the mercy, we can't achieve anything in our life. We just would be lost, like so many people we see out on the street who are not so fortunate to be able to come here. So we have to somehow repay our debt, which we can't really repay, but at least we should try. And Kadamakananda Swami, he was giving a very interesting talk in Vrindavan in Kartik last year, and he was talking about the crocodile of Maya and how it just gets us at any moment. If you're just a little bit attentive, it's just there, and it gets snapped right in his jaw. And he was saying how, you know, you can tame the snake even by chanting it, and you can, you know, and like you can tame wild animals just by feeding them. But you know, who's ever had a crocodile pet, like, you know, full grown? So he was giving that talk, and afterward, like, he was basically pointing out how we have to be so careful in our life to not, you know, kind of fall under, or kind of get in the grip of the crocodile. To be very, very careful. And after his class, there were questions, and one man raised his hand, and he was saying, "Oh my gosh, I have so many problems, my family, my wife, my children, paying the bills, the red paint of the house, and this problem, that problem." Like, he was just kind of pouring out his heart and telling about all these horrible things he has to go through as a grihastha. And the kitchen table, the Krishna consciousness, and all these big worries he had. And then Kadamakananda was like very patiently was listening to all these things. And then he said, "I have the solution. I have the solution." And he grabbed the item and grabbed the stunner and pulled out the stunner and began to say, "Take some out." And I was like, "How did you do that?" So then he was elaborating on what he actually meant. He said, "We just had a," I can't remember what it was, but they just had like a meeting of like all different nirvanas and ashrams in a sense. And you're saying, you know, the Gvanatas are saying, I don't have really an identity, I'm not either this or that, and then kind of, then the sannyasa is saying, I'm living in a house in Sweden and I don't have a heating system. So it's kind of like the pronunciation where, like, in Sweden in the winter it can be pretty cold. Then the women were saying, we are sick of chanting in cold, windy corridors. Then the grihastha was saying, I just can't look anymore, like, there's so many bills just piling up in front of me, and my children going off, and I, and like the brahmacharyas, the brahmacharyas were saying, everybody tells us we want to buy this brahmacharyas, they say, don't even try. So it's like, you know, like, the statistics speak against you. So that kind of the rate of brahmacharyas kind of falling. I don't know, you know, anyway, don't know what. And so it was basically saying how each and every ashram has its challenge. And what are you going to do about it? Lament and, you know, think, oh, this other ashram is better and this ashram is better and I wish I would be something and I wish I would be that. And so it's kind of the same thing as when you feel as if I would have just more money, I mean, all my problems would be solved, or if I would just have that part now, the problems will be solved. But it's not. The problems will always be there because that's the nature of the material world. You know, it's meant to give us problems, to make a solution, an ultimate solution, not a temporary fix for the problems in the world. So, and then he was saying something very interesting. He was saying, Srila Prabhupada was a Grihastha. And he was a congregation member. He was just one of these many, many, many devotees who were coming to the temple. Were, like, he didn't even come a lot to the temple because he had his business, he had many several children, he had his wife, he had so many things to run. And he was just one of these people who were coming along. You know, he got initiated, but like so many others got initiated. Sukaramakana Swami was saying basically, who's gonna be the one who pushes forward, who's gonna be the one who takes the challenge and whatever obstacles attain to that platform of Krishna consciousness, whether qualified to make a change in the world. And you're saying it is open for every single person. It is open for the grihasthas, it's open for the vanaprasthas, the brahmacharyas, the women, like anybody, it's open and it's there for anybody. But all we have to do is, like as Srila Goswami said, we have to be intensely greedy for the mercy. And we get that mercy from the spiritual master. So we have to very closely hook onto the lotus feet of the spiritual master. And if you're sincere about it, if you want to actually challenge, like, you know, our anarchas and want to free ourselves of the desire to exploit material energy and to enjoy the material energy, which is the, you know, which is the thing to do. But, you know, this is what else do we know? This is the only lifetime. But if we want to do that, if we want to face that, then we can be the one who is a huge inspiration to others and who can lead others on the path of perfection. And as the purpose he explained, and also the verse is that, you know, Srila Prabhupada speaks about how the spiritual master is not very eager to receive praise or worship or anything like that. He is doing it out of mercy. So it's not an external desire, but like a material desire. Oh, you know, if I give big classes, or if I, you know, everybody should see me doing this, and everybody should see me and basically I'm just after the same material adoration I've been looking out in this world for. Because this is the same thing people do. But as devotees, we might become over intelligent, a bit more sophisticated. So, you know, now suddenly instead of being a, you know, the guy with big muscles and big money or whatever, now we become very expert in speaking Vaishnava philosophy and make a big show of us. But ultimately our motivation is the same. It's fame and it's, you know, so many other things we want. So we have to face that. And we have to take the instruction, the advice from our superiors, and very humbly submit it and acknowledge it actually No, not that right. So the spiritual master is the one who can pull us out of the ocean. And yeah, you know, we're pretty stupid if you don't take his hand. Like, oh no, I'm actually quite fine, you know. Struggling in the ocean, you know, like getting a wave over the head on the side. And, like, I'm actually kind of okay, you know. Like there was this good moment, like maybe like 3 days ago when there was a sun ray falling on my head and felt kind of warm and nice, you know. So I just kind of keep trying to swim here. Yeah, so that's basically all I wanted to say. Is there any comments, questions, or corrections I made on my side? Yes?
Very nice. I'll ask you something. How does the spiritual master burn me to all the sins, past and future, everything? How does he do it? What is the mechanism? Want to tell us? How does he do it?
Well, I know about the, like, the, when you get initiated, apparently the spiritual master takes all your sins on himself. And as far as I know, also, during the period, like, sometimes the spiritual master gives you, like, he can give you something like a boost and a lift you. I wouldn't know about any other way he would do that. Does anybody else know?
Could you describe how the process of devotional service is the same analogy of how it's like fire and it also burns the sinful activities within our heart, past and in the future? So the spiritual master is the one who actually engages us in devotional service. When we come, he presents us to Srila Prabhupada. When we go back home, he's presenting us to the Acharya. So it's by his lips that he engages us in devotional service, and that's where we burn away all the sinful.
So that's an indirect way. That's also what's explained in the Gaurastika.
Yeah,
how he engages.
Like that's how he.
Do you know about the direct way, or he directly takes off the sinful?
Krishna is able to direct it through fire.
Yeah, but we can't.
The spiritual master is in touch with Krishna.
Yeah,
he puts you in touch with Krishna.
You know, Vrindavan, why I was asking you this question, because I saw you last year in Vrindavan also collecting nectar everywhere.
Sorry?
Collecting nectar all over the place.
Collecting nectar. Well, that's how we're supposed to do it.
So the mechanism, what we can understand is by two things, by action and connection. Spiritual master action is, he's always chanting the holy name, and as you said, dancing and taking prasadam, and preaching, that is action. And because of his connection with Krishna, such a firm connection, that he is able to destroy all our past and future things. So,
yeah.
These two mechanisms, action and
connection. So that's what Rasnani was saying.
Yeah. What was he saying?
The connection with the Supreme Lord.
The action and his connection with the Lord.
Yeah.
By his service, so devotional service is the main thing. Chanting, he's chanting the holy name for 24 hours.
Yeah.
And his connection becomes so strong with his Lord that he is able to burn everybody's past and future.
So you're referring in your question, you're referring to the empowerment of the spiritual master.
And as you said, once you are in the ocean, we are drifting all the time with the waves in the ocean. So he picks up in his boat, transcendental boat, and takes us to the depth of the ocean.
Yeah. The empowerment of the spiritual master, the one we rely on.
There is something great.
Does anybody else want to say
I just had an interesting association last weekend. I was doing some Lakshmi collection up around the center of the bushfire area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the fires had started. So it was only 2 months ago. But going through that area, it was actually quite an experience. Because the land is actually, it's really quite beautiful now.
Mm.
It's fabulously beautiful. Which is quite surprising, although you look around and you see the houses, because I was going door to door and seeing the houses, and they're like little it's just a house amongst You can see that there's been a holocaust around the house, you know, where flames have been licking up against the doorsteps. But the amazing thing about it is that there's no weeds. The land is pristine, you know, and with the little rain that they received just over the last month, all the grass is starting to come up, and the trees are starting to have little buds on them. But there's no weeds, there's no bracken, there's no thistles, or there's no bracken, you know, like, there's nothing, it's just beautiful. The land is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But talking with some of the farmers there, or the landowners there, they were also appreciating the beauty of the land and how actually the fire
refreshed everything.
Burned in all this weeds off. But then they said that we have to be now conscious. He said, now we have a start. He said, now we have a very beautiful land, but we understand that if we don't become diligent to the weeds, then they're going to start growing back
again.
Yes,
I get your point there.
So then they were saying, now we have a chance to actually weed out the weeds. Because before, you know, there was so much weed that you couldn't see the land. It was just covered with blackberries and thistle, and that you couldn't see the beauty of the land anywhere. But now we have a chance to now go over and pick up the blackberries when they start growing up, when the buds start growing up, because with the rains also the blackberries start coming back and all the weeds start coming back as well, but they have a chance to weed out these things. So I just was thinking that because of the analogy of forest fire appears so much in our philosophy, that we also, we've been cleansed from that fire, but we also have to be diligent with the weeds, because they also grow as well, along with the grass. And
thank you very much. It's a very, very nice example. And it's also, you know, the spirit must take our sins away, and then we start sinning again. Isn't that like, in Jesus Christ, like often people talk about Jesus Christ, and it saved them, that Jesus Christ said to not sin no more. Like, so he relates them. I just heard actually Shri Prabhupada talking about it the other day in a lecture. He was talking how, it's like really arrogant. He was saying how, like, they think, oh great, you made a fool out of the Son of God. And he died for sins and he keeps doing the same old thing. It's actually like blasphemy, he was saying. It's like, you know, like, look how great we are, we made a fool out of the Son of God. So it's like making a fool out of a spiritual master. He takes it all on him, takes all these reactions away, tries to bring us on the path, and we are so stupid we let all the weeds grow back. And not carefully taking responsibility to keep our new land clean and nice. Thank you very much. Do you want to talk to me? Anybody else? Yes.
You said that I want to make advancements and take a bottom of your spiritual master. I'm just wondering, some of the readers that go the whole life and then grant a lot of time and call the teachers, but they don't actually take formal education. So I'm wondering, if someone doesn't take formal education, but they want to teach you, can they still make an advancement and still go about the
school? Well, Shri Prabhupada said you must take diksha. It's compulsory. And there's I was also like hearing the other day a lecture where I was saying that what is the meaning of initiation? Like, what is the basic translation of initiation? It's like the beginning. It's like when you take initiation and your spiritual life really begins. And I don't want to make any offense or anything, but often also it doesn't even apply always. But often you can see that people who don't take initiation at once have their reasons for it.
Yeah.
They're holding something back. Like, there might be always, you know, a reason for them. So, yeah. And also,
And Srila Prabhupada was saying that when you're ready, the spiritual master will be sent. Because the spiritual master is the external manifestation of the supersoul. So the Lord inside reciprocates with your sincerity and sends you a guide from outside. You can directly approach and give you guidance. Because at that stage, who was the supersoul talking to them? So sometimes you need to hear the material ears. So yeah, that's what Srila Prabhupada said about it. There must be some because they're following the process, They're following the process, but Srila Prabhupada said it so clearly, he wanted all of his disciples to take initiation. Mm-hmm. So even if you want to follow Srila Prabhupada, you follow this instruction of him too. So even if you think, oh, Srila Prabhupada is my spiritual master, but he told you to do that.
Thank you.